Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain. It's my opportunity to step away from the world of serious stuff like politics and TV, sorry, politics and law that I cover on television, and talk about the fun stuff, the theater, the arts that we do here on the WGN Radio podcast Behind the Curtain. And recently saw a show that is just one of my favorites. I saw it on Broadway. I saw it on its tour. I see it every time it's around. And then when I saw last year, maybe, that Writers Theater was going to be doing a band the band's visit, I went nuts. And I actually reached out before anything was out, and I went, I need to do a podcast interview on that show. They went, wait, 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 it hasn't opened yet. I know. I love the band's visit. So joining me to talk about it, I guess we should start with the director, because that kind of makes sense, because he sort of makes sure everything is where it needs to be. Zai Ali Khan, thank you. You stepped it, you know this, but of course you stepped into the great David Cromer's shoes in some ways on directing this, right?
I did, yeah. It was a little intimidating to walk into Writers Theater. If you kind of make a little right turn around the corner, has this beautiful kind of retrospective of the history of the theater. And not for nothing, from our first day of auditions, I turned the corner and looked at what we affectionately sometimes refer to as the museum, and to see pictures. It was essentially like Cromer's yearbook back there. You see pictures of him growing up in his directorial practice, and I didn't get to meet him in earnest until we worked on this play together in 2019. And so to see him at places that are kind of a little bit more similar to where I am now on the walls of Writers Theater was both really bolstering and also a little bit intimidating.
Yeah, well, I get he's a nice guy. I met him last season. I forgot what show he directed, to be honest with you, but he was there to direct, and just what a nice guy.
Yeah, he's an
So
amazing
that
guy.
was really great. I think you're all stars of the show, so there's no such thing as introducing everybody in any kind of order of stardom. But I'll randomly sort of go this way. Playing well, Ram Bakhtiar plays Tufik in this show. Ram, tell everybody who is Tufik? Who are you?
Tufik is the commander of the Alexandria Ceremonial Police Orchestra. And he has been doing this probably for most of his professional career. And he's the leader of this band. They're a traditional orchestra. They play classic Arab music. And they're on a regional tour. This tour takes them to Israel. And that's where the play begins. They sort of have a mishap, and they end up in a wrong town. Tufik is a little put out by that, but he has to sort of figure out how to get the band back on track. And he's helped by the local inhabitants of the town, and he has an unexpected sort of revelation while he's there, let's say.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. And I guess before we go to the members of the town who greeted you, we should talk about the reason you ended up in the wrong town. Armand Agbari joins us, who plays Khaled in this show. And I'm going to tell you something about how you were very different in this role for me and other portrayals I've seen of it. But first, tell the audience who Khaled is, who your character is.
Yeah, for sure. Khaled is one of the members of the band, the youngest one of, although I don't know if you could tell. But then, so essentially he is the I love the rest of Rom. So he plays two instruments, but particularly he's the trumpeter, I guess, the trumpeter or whatever the
Right.
tricky term is. And essentially he comes here as obviously a member, but he also is dealing with this is his final trip or final venture before going back and finalizing an arranged marriage that he has. So his journey is both of musicianship with the band, but also of dealing with those last couple hours of quote freedom in that sense. So.
So can you tell us, I don't think this is giving anything away, but because we learned fairly early on why you end up in the wrong town, but can you share with us what the options of the towns were when you are sent to go buy the bus tickets? How did you make the mistake?
Right. So it's Betatikva and Petatikva. So the difference between a B and a P. In Arabic, there is no P or B. Wait, oop, oop, there's no P. B, P, there's no P.
Well, I
So
think, by the way, in the real, there is a Betatikva for real, but a Petatikva is fictional, right?
I believe so, yes.
it's
Okay,
the
but go
other way
ahead.
around.
Is it the other way around?
Petah Tikva with a P is a real place outside of
Right.
Tel Aviv, and Betah Tikva is a fictional town created by the movie The Band's Visit.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I didn't get
to. And has maintained its place in the musical. Yes.
All right. Thank you for that. Thank you for clarification. But anyway, so Armand, well, I guess you've explained how we end up in the wrong place. Even I'm confusing the town with the town.
I know, me too. You get too tripped up if you're not like super focused on it. But yeah.
Exactly. And let's talk to who greets you when you get to this, well, not fictional town in the band's visit, because there you are in this real town. But Sophie Modorsky, who plays Dina. And you know, I don't know if you guys read your reviews or so. Some people don't read them. You can read yours because they've all been phenomenal. And so, Sophie, talk a little bit about Dina. You play her with such strength. And I don't know. I feel, look, I've been to Israel. I've been whatever. And I feel like I met people who are exactly like your portrayal of Dina.
Thank you. Yeah, Dina is a former dancer, now cafe owner of a sad, sort of desolate cafe in Petah Tikva. I sort of like to think of her as sort of the mayor of the town. She sort of oversees everything, has interesting relationships with everyone in the town. And she has two friends, Itzik and Poppy, who are there with her at the cafe when she gets a surprise visit from Tufik and the rest of the Alexandria Ceremonial Police Orchestra. And similar to what Ram said about Tufik, they both undergo sort of a revelation of renewed hope during the show. But as you alluded to, her strength comes from years of sort of calcifying her hopes and her dreams so that she can sort of steel herself and not be hurt by all of the disappointment in her life.
Yeah, well put. And of course, there is a dynamic between between Dina and Tufik. But I guess before I get into that, Zai, look, what goes on in this town, this is, you know, this is Middle East, Israel, Egypt, these towns, you know, and these countries meet. When this show got selected, could anybody have thought, not that there isn't always something going on in the Middle East, but man, it resonates in a very powerful way, I think, these days, certainly since maybe October 7th.
Yeah, you know, I think something that's really profound about this play as a piece of text is the way in which it kind of encapsulates the experiences of our lives, kind of living inside of the worlds around us. And I think something that is so beautiful about this play and that we worked really hard on in this production was really creating full versions of these people for whom the world around this play was existing and the histories that they lived existed and the circumstances of the time. This play is set in 1996. There were a lot of really specific historical cultural events that happened in this part of the world from 1993 to 1996. And so thinking about that, it was really important to me. And I'm sitting here with three actors who just completely set my mind and my heart ablaze in doing this kind of work, that I think what's so beautiful about their work is they are able to hold all of these historical truths, all of these personal truths, all of the truths of the families of these characters, the experience of these characters, while also living very daily lives, which is something that we as human beings possess. I find it to be so fascinating how many of our plays really kind of talk more about the world around us than we might in our ordinary conversations. And I think something that is so gorgeous about this play and something I'm really proud of in this production is how it both feels very much like the conversations we have in real life while also holding so much of the truth of the world that exists inside of our lives as we have those conversations every day. So I think it's been a really, I've never been more proud of being able to kind of do that inside of the world of a play as this one.
Thank you for that. And it's an amazing thing to say. You know, in past times that I've seen it, I can remember leaving and, you know, talking about the music and the various things that we'll talk about. But I found that this time around, my partner and I sort of really focused in on the dynamics, on the just the truth of what the world is living through right now and how this reflected and how just timely it is. Ram, I'm always careful not to give away things in a show that I don't want to give away. I hate to say something and somebody, wish you hadn't said that. We want people to experience that. So although my favorite story is interviewing the cast of Dear Evan Hansen once, I said, is there anything I shouldn't say? And one of the cast members say, don't tell them Connor dies. Like he dies in the first 2 seconds of the show. I don't want to do anything. So I'm going to have you, Ram, and Sophie, talk to me about the relationship between Tufik and Dina, because it kind of maybe comes as a surprise, but it there's some moments as things, you know, shift and go on in the show, but Tufik, he stays true to something. What can you tell us about the relationship?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an incredibly unique relationship that they have, with two people living completely separate, different types of lives in different cultures. Seemingly, at first, you think, oh, they have nothing in common. This is just going to be a one-off kind of thing where they share pleasantries and then make their way into the world. But they are, because of the situation of the play, you know, forced to spend a bit of time together. And because she sees, Sophie's character sees something in Tufik that resonates with her, she decides to make the first step and say, hey, let's go out for a drink and, you know, just talk. And that happens, and Tufik is reluctant because he knows that, you know, it's probably something that is just going to be a time killer. So he finds that they have a lot in common. They share this musical interest. They share interest in film. She's much more wise beyond her years and in being able to express herself. And so he's really charmed by her and a little vice versa. And there's just this, they hit it off really well. And I wouldn't say necessarily in a romantic way, just two people that have something in common that are sharing the things that they both love that happen to be in common. And it's really wonderful when that happens in real life, and it doesn't happen as much as it should anymore in real life, because, you know, we have been separated by our phones and our computers and everything. So it's just, I just want to say it's more complicated than a sort of romantic dalliance, and sort of leave it at that.
So fair enough. And so, Sophie, it's interesting. You're nodding yes, as Ron was giving that description. But I want to ask you the same question, because I thought Dina feels the relationship in a more romantic sense than Tufik did. Is that a misread?
I don't think that's a misread. I think the nice thing about the show is it sort of leaves on a vague note, and it's up to the audience to come to their own conclusions about, you know, what does that chemistry really mean? And what does this ending moment, what happens a week after that? But yeah, I think what Ram was saying is that this is not like exclusively or primarily a romantic relationship or connection. It's actually I think about Dina, what she sort of receives from Tufik is this renewed awareness that she has hope. It's not that, oh, he makes me hope. It's that he makes me aware that I've lost hope and that there is hope that I can have. And so they connect. They're two people from very, very different places in the world, different generations, but they connect over their love of music, which is a huge element in our show. And as Ra mentioned, TV and Egyptian movies and Arab music. And so I think that this connection is more about how they sort of bring out this sense of lost hope in each other. And that's not inherently romantic. That's just human to me.
Yeah. And of course, what I find is it helps to have been around a little bit longer, because I'm having to explain to other people that there really wasn't Omar Sharif. And anyway, no, he's real. He actually existed. And Armand, I've only known you, Armand, since a few minutes before we began this thing, but I've already decided that you're the guy that when you show up, whether it was to rehearsals, whatever, the mood lightens in the room. You just seem very fun. And that was, I told you, I've seen your portrayal of Khaled being very different than I've seen it before, but I see it in you just in this interaction. For me, past Khaleds have been somebody that they're girl crazy. It's just about finding the date. You bring this sense of, and I mean this in a positive way, because I loved your performance. You bring this sense of innocence, of almost naivete or something that is there. But now I'm adding into it, I think, Armand's sense of fun. So am I reading that right? You're a little bit different than I've seen it before. I don't know if you've seen the show before, seen Khaled portrayed.
I would say so. And I have had the fortune of never seeing it in person, but I've definitely watched some bootlegs and watched many a clip of it. And I think it's interesting. I think it's very interesting when you step into a role like any of ours, where there is, I think, a very particular approach to it. And I think sometimes there is a sense of when you step into something that an expectation to sort of like follow that same path that previous actors, especially like that have been such well-renowned or so critically acclaimed or just so moving in their own right. But I felt so comfortable coming here, also under Zai and having all these conversations and getting to know everyone, how that sort of previous interpretation didn't necessarily fit how I understood the show. And I felt very blessed and very grateful to be able to sort of interject myself in this way into this character.
So Zai, it's good to come back to you because each of these characters' portrayal so distinct, so strong, in my views. And by the way, Sophie, I don't know if you know this, but even but if, again, I don't know if you read your reviews, but one of the reviews actually said you were better than, I won't say the other name, better than the performer on Broadway, because there's this on Broadway, there was this sense of elegance and whatever that was like the star quality that wouldn't go away in this show, and where for you we believe you as Dina is what I'm saying. You too have the star quality, but yeah, I'm just trying to say that your performance is one that we buy, that we believe. It's not distracted by anything that's behind you. Zai, in directing this show, again, these portrayals were very strong to me, and then we got the Armand character who's just doing his thing. How much did you let their personalities come into play in the way you directed this? I mean, in other words, was Armand the guy you were looking for Khaled, or did Armand come in and you say, we've got to play to you?
Well, that's an interesting question. And I think casting is generally such a big part of the equation. And something about all three of these people, when they walked into the room, there was something about their energy that captivated me inside of the people that they'd be playing in this play. And so there is a beauty that even from that first audition, every time one of these three people walked in the room, there was a sense of me meeting who that character would be, and finding excitement and joy and promise in that. And I feel very lucky that with Rom and Sophie and Armand, that promise was fulfilled in bounties, in this rehearsal process and in the play that you're seeing. But I think something that is really important to me is that plays are all about conversation and communication, and especially musicals. All, you know, musicals offer us the opportunity to have conversation through this incredible medium that is song. And I think something about all three of these people sitting in this room with me that is really special about them, is that they are honest, and very, very grounded and connected communicators through words and song, which I think is what makes this production really special, is there's no difference in that communication style. I also think that there is a really specific way in which we rehearse this play, and which I always rehearse, which is extremely collaboratively, where I am very much always in conversation with these actors about where they are. And I'm generally starting from their impulses and I'm starting from their thoughts. And it's my privilege and job to shape from the outside. And so it's this really beautiful symbiosis that I think we create, where they are kind of in charge of what the character's doing on the inside. And I kind of just help shape from the outside. And I think when that works really gorgeously. And I think we're both sitting in a room with three people for whom that has landed in a way that I feel so great about in this production.
Yeah, I was going to, before I change topics, does anybody want to respond to that?
I will. Zai's right on the money, and he's the kind of director that I have been sort of looking for my whole career, because that's exactly the way I prefer to work too, is letting those characters come from the inside, utilizing parts of your own personality and wisdom and experience, and then finding through the course of the rehearsal what works inside the actor, what works inside the character, and to bring it together and make it real. And so it's been such a tremendous opportunity to do that with Zai, and I think the results is just amazing. You just have to watch everyone on stage to go, oh yeah, that's a real person. That's a real person. That's a real situation. It feels like I know these people. I mean, it's natural now when you see it, but the work and the preparation that has gone into it is really a testament to how Zai works.
And I've always seen this until now, of course, on a proscenium stage. And so this is the first time where you're in the round, basically. And Zai, I imagine that brings challenges to you. But at the same time, look, there's moments where the actors come into the audience or certainly are touching the foot of the audience. That clearly, is that you just saying, I got nowhere to put them, I better put them there? Or is that you saying, no, I want to bring this audience into this story in certain moments?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing. This is my third time working in a space like this, and it is really, really specific, and it's really hard because there's nowhere to hide. And I think something about this play in this kind of space that's really special is that there, you know, I did another interview where I kind of talked about what's special about this play as a text is that the words feel very simple, but they contain the DNA of so much human experience inside of the words. And I think what's really, really amazing about this space plus this play is that the audience can feel the breath, can feel the hesitation, can feel the lust, can feel the yearning, because there was one review that talked about one of our actors hand essentially brushing the cheek of an audience member. And I think that's something that is so
careful that'll get you a lawsuit.
I know. Hopefully everybody's okay on the other end of that. But it's something that's really potent in this production is really being able to feel all of the stuff that is between the words and on top of the words and under the words, just because the audience is there with people. It's funny because a lot of people have used the word immersive to describe this production, which is not something that I had ever thought of when we were making it. But I do think in some kind of way, the audience is really immersed in the world because of how close they are to these performers.
Yeah, it really adds a special element to that. I mean, I don't know exactly how to tell you where I was sitting. But Sophie, when Dina does some of her numbers, you were doing them right to me. And you know, there was just this power, this connection that I just absolutely loved. By the way, don't feel bad about almost hitting somebody. I interviewed Jeff Hiller recently from Somebody Somewhere. He was in Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson on Broadway. He has a knife. And at one point, he's supposed to just pull it back and hold it. And by accident, he threw it into the audience. So things can happen. Don't let those knives go, you know, get out of the way. Let's talk about what I think is one of the most beautiful things of this show, and it is the music. Now, up until the pandemic, I also did a TV version of this show, which was called Broadway Backstage. And so I interviewed a while back for a different show, but David Yazbek. And I made him sign my music book. I had him sign Answer Me, which I think is one of the most gorgeous songs. I often think you can hear music and tell if it's David Yazbek, kind of a full Monty David Yazbek, but not this one. This one really has its Middle Eastern flavor, a flavor all of its to own. So in that interview, we talked about how we created it. But I just wanted to have each of you sort of respond to this particular music. Because it's one thing to say, oh, you know, Mark Shaiman wrote a good song. This is just different for me in terms of the magnificence of the music and how it fits in. Can we just do a round robin on that one? Sophie, let me just start with you.
Sure. Well, I agree about Answer Me. I think it's one of the most beautifully, simply written, powerful songs in the way it is placed in the show. And the chord that you land on at the peak of that song is just, it brings tears to my eyes every time I hear it. I was listening to David Yazbek, an interview that he gave talking about how he started writing this music. And he was talking about how his background is a Lebanese man. When he was a child, he would go to visit his family in Lebanon, and he'd hear these sounds, and he'd hear this music on the radio that he brings into Dina's text in her songs. And so this is very very authentic to the region that we are portraying in the show. And I think what makes our production so special is that we have a company of actor musicians who are playing the score for us. And I think what's really beautiful about this production, as opposed to other productions, is having a company of actors who we get to know. We get to know their characters. We understand their motivations and their desires, to see them further their own character line by watching them play the musical interludes in between scenes is sort of what I think reviewers meant when they said immersive. You see an entirely new side of their character when they're able to express themselves through music. That's one of my favorite parts of this production, and I will never tire of watching my company in the VOMs, just having them watching them have singular moments of musical brilliance on stage.
Yeah, and I think you should pass tambourines out to the audience so we can all sort of join in from time to time when appropriate. And Armand, you are the master of percussion in this show. And so it is worth noting, by the way, many of the actors are musicians in this show. They make that very clear. But but you talk about the music. What do you, the David Yazbek score, what do you think?
Sure. I think in a lot of musical theater, the a hope is that you sort of transform, you take the audience into this world and you really transport them into whatever atmosphere you're hoping for. And but that's often used to describe many musicals. And I think this is the first time I actually feel like consistently every song, I feel like I am being transported to this world. And I think the staging, the way the everything is set, how we have musicians in the VOMs as well, it does feel like this giant hug of music that's just consistently just like wrapping around you. And I find as the actor, I've seen in reviews, seen from audience members, but as the actor, you really feel like you once the first notes start, you kind of are not, you don't get let go until the very end. And then it's almost this hypnotic sort of trance that you fall into. And I think it's one of the most gorgeous, well-connected pieces of music that I've listened to or been able to give myself to as well. And I just find it to be so consistently transformative too. It's also a piece that like, sometimes when you listen to other pieces of music, eventually you get used to the particular rhythms or whatever, and doesn't have the same impact after so many listens or so many times singing or participating in it. And this is one of those that like consistently just grabs you and will not let you go. And I think what he's done, but I think the authenticity of it through both the instrumentation, through the just general orchestration of it, it just makes so much sense why it has that held, because it's rooted in such specificity to the region and rooted in such specificity, as Sophie was saying, to his own upbringing, that it just creates such a unique experience for as actor and then as audience member as well.
Yeah, thank you. And Ram, I mean, obviously your character who demands excellence from band members as they're going to play things, but I can't ever get this music out of my head. I mean, I'm sitting here now with a couple of songs running through my head. What's your thought about the music?
Oh, I just amplify both what Sophie and Armand said. The first song that I heard from this score was Omar Sharif. And I'm not a musical theater person, that just floored me how just beautiful it was. And I heard it on like a YouTube channel, and I thought, I got to see this show. And I was fortunate enough later to actually audition for a role, replacement role in New York. And so I went and actually saw it, and I was just amazed. It was just, as they said, one hit after another, one beautiful song, very distinct, different, beautiful song after another. And I thought, how could I be a part of this? I don't play an instrument. I don't know how to sing. I don't know how to do any of this stuff. And then Gabe Sassoon came on, and he doesn't know how to sing very well. So I thought, oh yeah, I could do that role. And it turns out that it's worked out. But oh my God, when people hear it, and you talk about reviews, there was one person that said that, or it might have been somebody who I just heard in the audience, that when they were in the house listening to our production, they couldn't tell where the music was coming from because it was coming from everywhere, and they were just surrounded by music.
Right.
And they didn't even realize there was an orchestra pit.
Right.
And so, so that means we've done our job there too, as well. And just sort of, again, using that word, immersive.
Yeah. And sometimes you have somebody holding a trumpet, but the trumpeter's actually over on the side, whatever. And you just have to kind of,
sometimes that happens too.
Yeah. And Zai, I want to talk just for a moment about, Telephone Guy. That's the name of the character, and the song Answer Me, which I think is one of the most beautiful in the show. But, it's just an interesting role to have in this show. We got all these dynamics going on. Again, I'm not going to give anything away, but, the role of Telephone Guy, what does it introduce to this story?
Totally. I think there's something, it's funny, my two favorite playwrights are Chekhov and Williams, and I've been thinking a lot, Sophie's been making me think a lot about Tennessee Williams through the course of the last like 20 minutes of talking, and about how much this play is essentially, it has so much of the kind of textual girth, of of a Williams play. But when you ask that question, Paul, I like actually think a lot about, you know, the kind of adage of how Chekhov named his plays. And he was always naming his plays through who he believed was the, like the lens of who he believed the protagonist of the play was. And it's really taken me a long time to kind of understand the telephone guy, or in our production, we call her offstage the telephone gal. You know, she is the only unnamed character in the play. She's the only character that we know as an idea, as opposed to as a name like Dina or Khaled or Tufik. And it took me a really long time to understand that in that way, she does centrally represent a feeling, a thought, a concept. We have an amazing actress, Harper Caruso, who is embodying so much of this in the most gorgeously human way. And I also think that as a character in the text, this telephone gal really just completely represents this idea of hope, and is this central beacon in the play of hope, is someone who is, every time she speaks, is speaking of hope. And I think in that way, every time she speaks to someone in this play, she's offering them a little bit of hope. And I think fundamentally, that is the big thing that everybody leaves this play with, is a recognition of, or an understanding that they possess maybe more hope than they thought they did, or that hope can positively influence the outcome or the aftermath of this story. And I think that the telephone gal in our production specifically really represents the person who is at the center of that idea.
And it's funny, so maybe I'm wrong on this, but I also saw the shift from telephone guy to telephone gal. I thought it was also introducing the concept of acceptance and, you know, and sort of expanding beyond that a bit, because if, you know, people who are looking at their programs or something might have a moment of, wait, what's going on? But I just love the shift.
I love hearing you say that. And to me, every community has the opportunity to be expansive, and to be able to create expansion inside of Betah Tikva, and to be able to show not only the band's visit, but other musicals moving forward in perpetuity, that every community has room for expansion, and that we can continually expand our imagination of what a community looks like. I've been really, really proud to collaborate with this group to be able to show that.
Yeah. And Theo Ubuque is another theater that really takes that very seriously as a mission. I really respect that. And I think this is just an amazing production. I thank you all for spending some time with me. I really appreciate it. You were just, I loved everybody in the show, but it was just such a treat to know I was going to get to spend some time with you. I really appreciate it. The band's visit is playing through March 24th. And my understanding, Zai, is that's it, right? March 24th.
That is it. We have to get out of there. So get down there to see it. You've got less than a month.
All right. Tickets can be at writerstheater.org. Theater spelled the proper British way, T-R-E. I always respect that. And thank you. Break legs, everybody, as the show continues. I hope I can get out there one more time to see it and have dinner at Guildhall or wherever I was eating beforehand. But just wonderful. You guys are magnificent. And I congratulate you. And break legs. And thank you for spending time. I appreciate it much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.